there a doctor in the house?
Doctor, doctor, give me the news. I got a bad case of loving you.
Doctor.
It's time for Advanced Medicine Monday with Dr. Rashid Batar.
I'm a doctor, not a bricklayer.
A doctor, not a mechanic.
I'm a doctor, not a coal miner.
The doctor is in.
And it's the Independence Day week spectacular version of the Advanced Medicine Show on Robert Scott Bell's show with Dr. Rashid Batar. How are you doing, my independent friend?
I'm doing very well, Robert. How are you?
Doing well. It's you know, the week to celebrate freedom, if there ever was one. And I know that you love liberty and you love the land of liberty and all the high ideals it stands for. So, you know, we're going to dive into some discussions of that freedom today, if you don't mind.
Absolutely. You know, I didn't realize that July 1st was Canada's Freedom Day. I didn't realize that.
Yeah, and in fact, Canada's Freedom Day led to cannabis freedom because they're evidently the second country in the world after Uruguay to legalize cannabis, and that's going to happen like in October. So they're setting the stage for, my gosh, acknowledging a plant that God created shouldn't be made illegal.
You know, it's so funny that there's a gentleman that I know, a friend of mine, a really good friend, actually, and he had, this is like 25 years ago, was actually prosecuted for growing cannabis for people that were having appetite issues that had cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And ended up having to, actually, I think he spent, if I'm not mistaken, I think he spent like 6 months in jail. And now, you know, 20 years later, same issue, and now they've legalized it. So isn't it interesting how man's laws change?
Yes.
And people were, you know, they were punished for something that today is not considered wrong at all.
Right. Yeah. Today, looking back at what he was jailed for, today he would be praised as, you know, someone with great foresight and compassion in helping people that genuinely needed this kind of help. So you're right. Man's law changes. God's laws are mutable. And that's the point of free will. Interesting, the discussion I wanted to get into with you. Now, on this article about free will, there's a picture of a guy jumping off of a building, but he's got a parachute, so he's not trying to end his life. And have you jumped out of an airplane before? I have a feeling you have.
I have jumped out of. I don't know why, but I don't know if anybody else is experiencing this, but I'm hearing you double.
No, I just heard you triple on that. I don't know what's going on. Are we okay on our connection to Dr. Batar? I'm just going to go forward and assume that we are at the moment. But
I can hear you fine now. But yeah, I have jumped out of planes. Yes, I have jumped out of planes. I won't say how many times and where, but I will say that, yes, I've done that.
Okay, because my son, who you know, turned 18 6 months ago, but his buddy turned 18 just yesterday or 2 days ago, and they went and jumped out of a plane to celebrate. And they had a great time. They're like, Dad, you got to do this. I'm like, no, son, it's okay. I'm good. But you know, have fun.
It's actually funny because we had a little joke. I was talking to one of my attorneys earlier today, and it was kind of funny because we were joking about this. And during jump school, the thing was that it's 3 weeks. So the week one, they separate the men from the boys. The second week, they separate the idiots from the men. The third week, the idiots jump. So that was like, you know, why would anybody jump out of a perfectly good operational plane? So that's why they label it the third week, the idiots would jump. So that's how we were labeled.
Well, apparently a lot of people have fun doing this, and it's a thrill. And so when it comes to free will, you think about that. Who makes you jump out of airplanes, right? Normally you wouldn't want to. So it's got to be, you're thinking this is going to be awesome and I'm going to land safely. For those that have not have a death wish, of course. And the article here about free will is fascinating because it's like the psychology of it. And they're saying when they were able to convince people that free will doesn't really exist, or they had doubts in free will, their behavior changed. They would often no longer be charitable. They would often be more likely to cheat or cheat others if they felt that, well, it's not my will, right? And it's a fascinating thing because in many ways, Dr. Batar, I've learned about not my will, but thine. In other words, talking about a creator or a God. But in this case, it's different because the people are not living what I would perceive to be more godly lives if they eliminate the belief in free will. They're in fact going, it's not my fault. I didn't choose it. I didn't do it. And so suddenly they become less godly. Isn't that interesting?
It is interesting. There's also another angle to this, and that is that they're, again, coming back to free will. Sometimes we need to learn to move into resistance because that which we resist will only persist.
Yeah.
That's right. So sometimes, and this is one of the things that I see with cancer, patients that are suffering with cancer, they are very, very resistant. Cancer is all about stagnation. You've got stagnation of chi, stagnation of lymphatics, stagnation of flow of circulation, stagnation of, you know, there's all these esoteric aspects, like if you talk about chi, but then you've also got hardcore, like lymphatics and circulation. There's a stagnation of it. So, and then you start looking at how they feel, their emotional basis. Okay, they've usually got some type of anger, fear, guilt issue. These are all stagnating type of emotions. And then you've got on top of that, the sense of fear of or the things that they resist, like heights. I'm scared of heights. I'm scared of, I'm claustrophobic. I'm scared of spiders. I'm scared of what? So one of my instructions to my patients that are coming to us that are seeking help when they have an immune issue, i.e. cancer, HIV, whatever it is, but it usually the types of things that we're dealing with immune issues are cancer. What I tell them is that whatever you are in fear of, or if you're scared of heights, climb a ladder, go jump out of a plane. If you're scared of, you know, closing spaces, go sit in your closet for 10 minutes, 15 minutes. Whatever it is, go do it. Because the first thing is that you realize that fear is just an illusion. You can't smell fear. You can't taste fear. Fear is an illusion, in the words of Tony Robbins, false evidence appearing real. So I tell people they need to move into their fear, because as soon as they do that, it dissipates. And again, this free will aspect that you're talking about, Robert, if we didn't have free will, we wouldn't have the ability to actually go into that place of fear to overcome it, and then we would become paralyzed because we're constantly surrounded by fear. Those people that jump out of planes and do these, you know, what some people consider crazy things, some of us are adrenaline seekers, but some of us are doing it because we know that we need to move into that which we resist. I mean, I used to have a problem with heights. I probably still do, but I still go and do whatever I need to do because, you know, once you do it a couple of times, you realize there's nothing to worry about. So I climb things all the time. Not like a monkey or anything, but you know what I mean. I try to put myself in that situation. So I think free will, that's this other angle, because when we have free will, we have the free will to actually move into resistance and overcome our demons, our fears, that holds us back.
There's another aspect to the convincing people there is no free will, and that goes to determinism. And this is the idea that everything's predetermined, so what does it matter what I do or do not do? And so it lowers your, you know, I think your willingness, and I say willingness in it, sort of facetiously, to be grateful for the things that you have, because it's all written anyway. What does it matter, right? It's like, to me, it's such a maybe it's a judgment. It's a horrible way to live. I mean, what a depressing way to live. I'm excited about the things that I get to choose, right? I joke too that when I go into a health food store or a supermarket, it's too much, it's overwhelming, and I go catatonic. I'm like, I don't need that many choices. Like, I'd rather choose the stuff out in my garden than all the fancy colors that don't exist in nature in a grocery store. But the freedom to have the ability to go into those grocery stores and go, you know what? Don't want any of that. Without having that, I never knew I would have made that choice. So I think the advantage of having all the wondrous things that we have that we might now perceive as, well, that's kind of frivolous, don't really need it. But having the opportunity to move through that lets me know that I'm making the choices for what I perceive to be the right reasons, because I really want that, as opposed to because I've got no other choice.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I think this goes back, I can't remember for sure, I need to go back and I'd have to go back to my theology major days when, you know, studying Descartes and Bacon. And one of them, I think it was Descartes that had the philosophy of predeterminism. But, you know, I completely agree with you, because I think that type of thought process is in itself restrictive, that thought process that, you know, what it's hard for a person to get up in the morning, like you said, and be motivated about life if you feel that, or if you believe that everything's already predetermined and there's no choice. I think even in the predetermined philosophies, though, they are preset. There's a belief system that the things have already been figured out, but you still have a choice which brick to land on, and then from that there's a finite number of choices. So even with the predeterminism group, they still believe that there is still a component of free will in there, or a component of will, the way you can exercise and choose certain components, and then from that there's a preset determination of what the possibilities are, and then you take another leap into one of those bricks, and then so and so forth. I think even with predeterminism, there's some free will.
Yeah, and how about the free will that you encounter in your patient population over the years? Those, we've talked about this extensively on Advanced Medicine, that those coming into you that have a certain mindset, a belief that they can heal, for instance, quite different outcome, even if they don't do everything perfect, than those who don't believe they can heal, and they do all everything you tell them to do. How that manifests, the energy that they draw into themselves and then put back out to the world, is based on a choice of believing they have the ability to do something or not, or the freedom to do it.
I completely agree. I think that that mindset has everything to do with what the outcome will be. And if you didn't have free will, then everything would, you know, there's no point. If you didn't have free will, then and you wouldn't have the choice of deciding whether you really believe something or not. Mm-hmm. And the outcome would be the same for everybody. So I completely agree with you.
And this is one of the confounding factors of peer-reviewed when we talk about double-blind, crossover, multi-centered trials, placebo-controlled trials, because it doesn't consider and take into account the relationship of whoever's administering the test or the drug or whatever it is and the interaction with the perception of the person receiving it. How do they feel about that person? All of these things matter, and you can never account for every one of those factors to say definitively, because ultimately we are individuals operating and interacting as individuals, despite our collectivist determinist mindset that this is arguing maybe they can control you with.
Yeah, and I think that the predetermination aspect is in of the person who's setting up the study, what they've already predetermined in their head as the desired outcome will also impact those type of things, because they've already got an agenda. They're already trying to prove something. Then very rarely does somebody go into a study to show, you know, with no bias one way or the other. There's usually a bias. I mean, I know that when I conduct a study or I test something, I have a bias. If I didn't have a bias, if I didn't believe that something worked, I wouldn't waste my time doing it. But I'm trying to determine if what I've observed actually is working. So I have a bias towards that because I've observed it. So I think this is another component that, you know, where our biases lie. And it's not, there's nothing wrong with having a bias. I mean, to be human, you have to have an opinion on one way or the other. So I think that that also affects the eventual outcome.
It's the human experience, folks, and we talk about it here doing Advanced Medicine with Dr. Rasha Bitar. Each week, go to robertscottbell.com. You can go to advancedmedicine.com. In fact, there's a special webinar coming up in 2 days we're going to tell you about when we come back from this break.
The Robert Scott Bell Show. In all my years of radio, I've never seen anything like this.
The Robert Scott Bell Show. The Robert Scott
the
Bell
Robert
Show.
Robert Scott Bell Show.
Liberty the rest of the year. This week, they'll actually acknowledge it because of Independence Day. Did that go out over the air the whole time? Because I was talking. Gee. All right, Dr. Bitar. So, we got a webinar scheduled for the day after Independence Day, Thursday, the 5th of July, starting at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time. The question is, how do they get there? They have to be part of the Advanced Medicine Group. And we have a way. Super Don does have that link available. We're going to get a direct link to as well to sign up. But you must become a member of the association. And on the Robert Scott Bell Show, you have a code, 1358. 1358 is your special code to get invited and in, and a lifetime membership for $1. And then once you're in, we'll tell you about the webinar. Or maybe you'll tell us about the webinar now, Dr. Bitar.
Well, actually, I will. And Robert, what I'm going to do is... probably the best thing to do is to send this email to Don, and then you guys can go ahead and send this out, because this will have your, you know, the component that you're talking about. But the webinar is actually designed for two groups of people. One that would like to participate in a study where we are, the technology that we had talked about before, the medically advanced, naturally guided optimization where you can induce a cell resonant field that will benefit an individual, it helps to take the electromagnetic frequencies and make them more cell resonant rather than cause problems. It's more the energetic aspect. And again, this may sound esoteric to some people, but the various types of energetics that are affecting us, everything from the smart meters, the ambient cell phone radiation, the electromagnetic radiation we're exposed to, you know, all sorts of different energetics that people are exposed to. So this first one is we're looking at being able to induce very, very inexpensively a field that's beneficial to people. And it actually revolves right around the energy bands, which you know about, Robert, that, you know, you've seen the testing done and such. But now we've added a different component to it. So it's pretty exciting. And I just want to tell you that we had the information that had been sent out, I guess, 2 weeks ago, we first started talking about it. And inadvertently, from my office, from the Charlotte office, and then, you know, we've got the San Antonio office and then the California office, which are not fully up. The San Antonio office is not going right now, but from the California office, and I don't know whether it's from the California office or from Charlotte, what happened. But anyway, a couple of bands got sent out before the study was ready to start. Mm-hmm. And we start getting these responses within the first week of people, you know, saying they can't believe the difference. They're sleeping better. It hadn't even started yet. So it was so funny that we are not even collecting the data that we needed to collect. And so hopefully those people have stopped. We asked everybody to stop. And, you know, we're going to launch this after the 5th. It'll probably be the bands will be sent out to the people that are going to be participating the following week. And I'm not exactly sure the exact date, but I believe around the 13th, 14th of July, the official study will begin. And it's just a subjective SF-36 patient outcome-based type research model, so we'll be getting information. People will be filling out the head map every week as opposed to every month to give us an idea of what's going on. The second component of the webinar is really the main part of it, which is the cardiovascular protocol. Mm-hmm. And basically, we're going to have people that are going to be on this protocol that have already been treated conventionally and have not had full resolution or have intractable disease, have been refractory to conventional treatment, or, you know, have had certain levels of success in certain types of treatment but want to try something new. And we're going to basically have that limited to a small group of people and then basically measure their outcomes and measure, you know, whether they have improvement, worsening of their various types of symptomology, everything from chest pain, blood pressure, dyspnea, you know, shortness of breath, exercise tolerance, et cetera, et cetera.
Very good. So there's still space available to participate, in other words, as we're launching this webinar 3 days from today, if you're listening live.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
All right. Well, we're going to get a link into the show notes in addition to the link we already have so you can become part of the association and you can access all of this and more. And when we come back from this brief break, we've got some more stories. In fact, one about, I don't know if this was free will related, but it's about thriving after depression. Why are scientists ignoring good outcomes? That's been a big question of mine, pet peeve, if you will, about docs. Why don't they ask questions about the people that succeed and what they did and maybe try duplicating that for other people? We'll get to that next with Dr. Rasha Bittar doing advanced medicine on the Robert Scott Bell Show.
You're listening to the Robert Scott Bell Show. The Robert Scott Bell Show.
Everybody should want to listen to Advanced Medicine on the Robert Scott Bell Show with Dr. Rasha Bittar each and every week. Archives available now at advancedmedicine.com. Links are up in the show notes. You can be participating in way more than just the 2 hours a day, 6 days a week, much less the one special hour we get with Dr. Bittar each and every week here, going back many years now. Thriving after depression. This is the headline. Why aren't doctors looking more into the success stories and kind of pulling apart what was it that made this person succeed and not the next, right? You talk about that all the time. I think this is part and parcel to advanced medicine, is listening to patients, what they're presenting to you. It matters and it means something. Now, it may also reveal things that are sabotaging themselves or yourself, but that's good too, that we don't paper over it or drug over it. to acknowledge there's a psychological, emotional, and spiritual component. Over my left shoulder, you'll see a book called The Nine Steps to Keep the Doctor Away, and the video right here on my shelf. Let's see, I point to it right there. And that's by Dr. Bitar, international bestseller. Goes into these sets of understanding, deep level understanding, the parallel tracks of all of these diseases. As much as he or I will talk about physiological toxins, heavy metals, and we will not discount their seriousness, we will also not discount the seriousness of these other aspects that could rob you of your inevitable healing or could have driven you into your disease process. Dr. Bitar, am I saying anything new or unusual?
No, I think everything that you're saying is probably it's innate intelligence. I think it's intuitive to most people.
I hope so.
But just basically, like, even just talking about listening to patients, that's just such a fundamental truism. If you want to help somebody, anybody can help. Even if you're not a doctor, and somebody wants a minister, a priest, a coach, a teacher, the first thing you do is you listen. And by just listening, you have a healing effect. So, yeah, everything that you've said, I totally agree with.
Yeah, and the thing is, that's so horrible about the many horrible things about the allopathic medicine and the monopoly and the degrees and the licenses, that they're, you know, herding the doctors into a place that maybe many doctors don't want to be. They didn't realize what they were getting into. But when it comes to, for instance, the vaccine issue, what are they talking about? Listening to parents? No, they're saying, parents, you should shut up because you don't know what you're talking about. We're the doctors. You didn't see what you saw in your kid after we gave them a vaccination. Right? So it's the exact opposite of healing that happens in much of the pediatric profession when it comes to the well baby visits, the vaccines, and then purposefully ignoring or suppressing the speech and the communication from those parents who would know best.
You know, that's such an important part, Robert. So when you talk to an attorney about the biggest reason for doctors to be sued, it's because of lack of communication. And so one of the fundamental things to reduce the risk of being sued that they teach and all these different courses, it's listen to your patient. Yet, when it comes to something like a vaccine, there's that dogmatic belief system to refute the observations of the parents who know better than anybody else because they're with the child 25 hours a day, 8 days a week. You know, they're there. Everything, their lives revolve around their children. Why would we ignore the observation, not of one or 10 or 100 or 1,000 or 10,000, hundreds of thousands of parents all over the world that observe the same thing? Why do we ignore that?
And how much, Dr. Bitar, how much depression out there is the result of someone feeling like nobody listens to them? Nobody. I'm not trying to say it's the only thing, but man, how much of it could have been alleviated had someone taken the time to genuinely listen, not judge them, but listen to what's going on, that they need to, you know, maybe unburden themselves in some way, shape, or form. That, you know, we look at this, we say, no, we have to give them an SSRI drug. Well, maybe you do, but maybe you didn't. How do you know if you never try all these other things? Because they go drug first, then maybe we'll think about other things later.
Well, I would venture to say that I believe personally that a lot of depression, possibly all depression, has some component of a person feeling that they're not being heard or nobody's listening to them. I know that sounds probably like a very broad statement, but if you think about it, you know, you go to a doctor, you have the doctor do tests on you, and the doctor says, well, I don't see anything wrong. Patient says, well, I still feel bad. Doctor says, well, here's an antidepressant. This is a very common thing that happens all the time. I know it happens all the time because I have patients that come to me with, you know, all sorts of metabolic issues or disruptions, and they're told by the doctors they had the blood work, there's nothing wrong with them, there's something in their head, and they're prescribed antidepressants. They come to us, we do a heavy metal challenge, we see that they've got, you know, mercury or lead or whatever they're pushing out, or they've got some type of toxicity. We help them get better, and yes, their symptoms start getting better, and guess what? Their depression gets alleviated because now they're not being made to feel that nobody's listening to them. And it's not just doctors here. I'm talking about whatever profession. You know, if you go to an attorney and the attorney's not listening to you, or, you know, a child doesn't feel like the parent is listening to them, or the wife doesn't feel like the husband's listening to her, or vice versa, the husband doesn't feel like the wife's listening to him. Whatever the case is, I think that all aspects, and this is my personal opinion, I believe that if you trace it back, if you're dealing with depression, you trace it back, I believe that there's going to be some component of where the patient doesn't feel that there are being heard.
You know, it occurs to me that then SSRI prescriptions are an admission of failure by the doctors to get to the bottom line or the root cause of what really ails the person, whether it be depression or not. As you said, it's just that, well, I've done the tests, it shows nothing, and you, as a patient, you say, but doc, I still feel rotten. Well, here's this drug. I said, what does that tell you to the doctor's competency? That's incompetence if that's the case.
Well, unfortunately, Robert, I agree with you what you're saying, but unfortunately, there are so many cases of incompetency that are protected by the standard of care.
Right.
That is like a umbrella that protects you no matter what you do, as long as you're within the standard of care. And then you can exceed and do all sorts of good things. But, hey, it didn't meet the standard of care, and so it's automatically labeled as substandard. Regardless of the fact that the patient's alive and doing better and they were told they had 3 months left to live, that doesn't matter. It's remember the word that was used with the medical board in my situation? Irrelevant. Yeah. It's irrelevant that the people that you're treating with end-stage cancer are now doing better and alive and well and 5 years and 8 years out and no trace of cancer and PET scans are negative. And it's irrelevant that that's happening because you are doing treatments that are not proven in a double-blind placebo-controlled crossover multi-center trial, and therefore it's automatically assumed they're taking advantage of a patient. So this is the type of mentality that we're dealing with. And if you've got the standard of care protecting you, you can have any level of incompetence and get away with it. And so what you're talking about, this, you know, SSRI, DALG, or whatever other application you want to put, because there's about a million different things you can substitute in there,
right?
They're protected by it.
Yeah, well, it's, you know, mediocrity as far as advanced medicine versus mediocre medicine. I look at this, it's frustrating to me because I do perceive that most doctors go into becoming doctors. They want to do the right thing, right? Maybe a generalization, but I have a sense about that. They get in a system, they become trapped. Now, you got a good guy like Dr. Bob Sears as a pediatrician out in California. He's just been tagged by the board has been after him for years, right? Because he writes exemptions to vaccination. And they said, you wrote an improper exemption because you based it on a mom's reporting of a very serious adverse reaction to a previous vaccination. But you didn't do any tests. You just believed her. I'm like, that's good medicine. You know, the mom, who knows? It's just like you said, Dr. But now he had to kind of agree to something so that he could still keep his license. Part of me, a big part of me, says hashtag walk away. I'm borrowing this hashtag walk away from Brendan, who we had on Friday, talking about liberals who are walking away from the Democratic Party because they've gotten deranged and loony. And at a certain point, you look at the medical profession and the medical licensing boards, and it's like there's a derangement and a Looney Tune aspect to this that in order to regain your sanity, yeah, you won't be able to quote-unquote practice medicine in that way, but why would you want to? Hashtag walk away. Now, I granted, you know, those that are feeling the need to stay and fight, I'm not going to argue you shouldn't. I'm just saying there's a point where you have, for your own sanity's sake, your own soul's sake, you can't deal with these bozos anymore. And you've got to walk away and then find another way. But I'm just throwing it out there for everybody to consider. Don't take the abuse for any longer than you have to, unless there's a purpose for it.
Well, I would have to agree with you, Robert. But the problem is when you've invested so much time, money, effort, you know, after high school, 4 years of college, 4 years of medical school, internship, residency, incurred so much debt and to livelihood, you know, what? Sometimes people don't have a choice.
No, it's a trap. It's a rough place to be. I get that. That's why I don't want to sound judgmental about docs that are in it. I'm just saying, you know, obviously you got to stand your ground and fight for what's right, but there's a certain point, if you can, these people, these medical boards, they are abusers. They are abusing doctors who would do the right thing, who would exceed the standard of care for the care of their patients to help them, not hurt them. And that's a form of abuse, just as a spousal abuse or other forms of abuse are.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, there's precedence being set now. Already there was one case with good friends of mine, Mark Geyer.
Yes, Mark and David Geyer.
Right, and Mark, we were with them a couple years ago in Autism One, yeah. So you remember their research and what the research had shown about vaccines, and they were basically land blasted and slandered by the medical board. And I think he ended up losing his license, and then he filed a lawsuit and regained his medical license, but also got damages. And it was really interesting. It was a $2.5 million damage award that he won. And what was interesting was that the medical, judge in the case determined that half of that award would come from the personal assets of the individual members of the medical board.
That's right.
Based upon their own, you know, wealth, which is amazing. Okay, now this is, medical boards are supposedly, they're protected. They're untouchable. But this was the first precedent. My dad had said this years ago. He said, when a prosecutor is held up to the standard that, you know, that he's not above the law, or a governmental, or a board, or a governmental agency, or quasi-governmental agency, when they realize, or when somebody sets a precedent that they're not above the law, that's when things will change. And this has already happened now. And I foresee it happening more now.
Yes.
Because there's things that are happening behind the scenes, and there's going to be more of this.
It's very true, Dr. Pitar, and it's happening even in the legal profession with their equivalent of their board of medicine, which is, you know, the state bar. They're attacking Mr. Phillips. Amazingly, this guy has been fighting for those who are in need of vaccine exemptions, using the law as it is, and they're going after him the same way they're going after good doctors like Dr. Sears, and the way they've gone after you over these years. All right, one more advanced medicine segment to go, folks, on Independence Day week here on the Robert Scott Bell Show. Check out the links at robertscottbell.com. Also, you can link out to advancedmedicine.com, and you can see the upcoming events, including the webinar Thursday, July 5th, that Dr. Pitar will be conducting.
The Robert Scott Bell Show.
In all my years of radio, I've never seen anything like this.
The Robert Scott Bell Show. In the health world, through the power of radio, it's the Robert Scott Bell Show.
All right, folks, always a good time with Dr. Pitar here, Advanced Medicine, wrapping it up for the week, heading into the Independence Day Spectacular with Michael Badnarik, the author of Good to Be King, A Foundation of Our Constitutional Freedoms. And we talked about free will today. It's always some cool topics you don't expect. Advanced medicine. Oh, y'all are going to be talking about chromosomes and drugs. It's like, no, forget you. We're talking about healing on all levels, and the deepest that go to the spiritual realm, we're not afraid to tackle as well. So thank you, Dr. Pitar, for being here with me to do this each week.
Well, thank you, Robert, for allowing me the opportunity to do it each week with you.
Yeah, no, it's fun. It's fun. We have a good time. Now, we talked about thriving after depression, listening to patients, listening to people. And now we got more insanity in medicine, reversing autism with a cancer drug. Researchers are saying it's a gene defect. It's a chromosomal defect. It's like, wait, how did that happen? Right? Suddenly now, epidemic of autism that's genetic, which doesn't make sense. It's an oxymoron, a genetic epidemic. And they're saying we've got an experimental new drug that can fix it. It's like, well, how about nutrition? That's known to fix genetic defects. Huh? How about that? Give him a cancer drug, Dr. Pitar. That'll fix the autism epidemic.
So, you know, when they talk about the genetic aspect, there is a genetic predisposition for the inability to excrete, the inability to actually clean the body on its own self-regulatory mechanisms. For example, you've got a glutathione S-transferase polymorphism, or you have a methyl tetrahydrofolate reductase enzyme deficiency, or there may be certain things like that. And there's many of those things that are out there that many of them we haven't even elucidated yet. But the point of saying that this is a genetic defect, no, it's not a genetic defect. There may be a genetic predisposition based upon some polymorphism, but you can't fix it. First of all, it's not a genetic defect. And secondly, if it was a genetic defect, you can't fix a genetic defect with a drug. I mean, if that was the case, then they'd be going around fixing all the genetic defects. So you're telling me that they say, okay, cancer is caused by genetics, which actually it doesn't, but again, there's a genetic predisposition. Whatever ailments are out there that they say there's a genetic component to it, if they could fix the genetic defect, a true genetic defect, with a drug, then we wouldn't have any of those illnesses. And yet we do. So you can't rewrite the program that came with the you can't change the operating system that the computer came with. Mm-hmm. If the person is truly born with a genetic defect, then they've got a genetic defect. And by definition, you can't correct it with a drug.
Yeah,
but it isn't a genetic defect, and even in that case, it's they're ignoring the environmental issue, and it's the environmental trigger that, along with the genetic predisposition, allows for that problem to manifest, and that's what it comes down to.
What's the point of prenatal care or preparation for becoming pregnant? For both men and women, cleaning up your act, detoxifying your body, filling your body with nutrients from whole, organic, unprocessed foods or supplements that are appropriate to do so. And we know there have been scientific studies that show that minerally replete, not depleted, but replete, people have healthier children with fewer or no genetic defects. That's why we take prenatal supplementation. I hope they're not synthetic, but the point is, this is not unknown, and that these people are just jumping right in. Oh my gosh, we can use a drug to correct these genetic errors. Well, if you have an inability to excrete mercury, you know, and someone next to you has a better ability to do it, they're going to be less harmed, not totally not harmed by mercury, but they'll have a ability to kind of maybe not as viciously be affected by it. We get that, but mercury's not good for either of them. But the point is, why do we do the same for everybody in terms of vaccination? They don't even consider that.
Right, exactly. This is an important point, actually. I've heard this many times. Well, if mercury was bad for you, the vaccines were bad for you, whatever, you know, whatever skin, amalgams are bad for you, then it would hurt everybody. And the point is, it does. There's certain people that can get rid of the garbage, the poison, easier than other people. And there's varying levels of that. And so it's not a question that it hurts some people and doesn't hurt anybody. It hurts everybody. It's just that some people's genetic predisposition is to get rid of this stuff fast. And so they don't have they don't manifest the problem. There are other people that unfortunately can't get rid of the stuff as fast, and they end up manifesting the problems.
But everybody should get vaccines. Don't ask questions. Your doctor won't listen to you, especially if he or she is a pediatrician, other than Dr. Bob Sears and a few others that we featured on this show. But if you do that, the licensing board's going to come and get you. They don't want you to write exemptions because medicine is amateur hour. It's amateur hour. Not here, though, with Dr. Bittar. It's advanced. Y'all check it out, advancedmedicine.com. The webinar is coming up in a couple of days. If you're listening live, July 5th, get in, get plugged in, and it's linked up in the show notes. Thanks to Super Don. Go to robertscottbell.com. The code, your invitation code, 1358 if you're not already a member. Cost you a buck for a lifetime. I'm serious. It's awesome. Dr. Bittar, you're amazing. Thank you, my friend.
Thank you, Robert.
Tell them what they need to know because it is time to go.
I can't even believe that the show's already over.
Yep, say it.
It's unequivocally yours.
Yes, it is.
The Robert Scott Bell Show.